From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, AI and the end of the human era. Here's what's happening. Seismologists believe that California is decades overdue for a big earthquake, oh boy, measuring magnitude 7 or greater on the Richter scale. A massive fault line zone in the Bay Area of Southern California is thought to be at most risk, with experts giving it a 72% chance of a large tremor within the next 30 years. Tomorrow, they are going to drill, preparing 9.3 million people for the inevitable. Be ready. A suspect in shootings in Maryland and Delaware that left three people dead and three others injured, caught in Delaware after a manhunt. Rady Labib Prince, a 37-year-old, is accused of killing three people, wounding two others at his job in Maryland. Police say he shot a sixth person about 2 hours later at a Wilmington, Delaware car dealership. A high-ranking former member of the North Korean government says the harsh economic sanctions imposed on the country could be enough to wipe it out within 12 months. The former economic official appointed by Kim Jong-un's father, the predecessor, says that the United Nations trade restrictions are so strong there that it could triple and cripple the isolated nation. Howard Bloom with us. I want to get his perspective on Korea because I still think, Howard, something's going to happen.
Happen because, first of all, the president is considering going there. We don't know whether that's a good idea or not. One of Donald Trump's problems is even he doesn't know what's going to come out of his mouth next. And look, we've had what seems a quiet period, a month without a bomb or missile test from North Korea's dear leader Kim Jong-un, but things are not quiet. North Korea's Deputy Ambassador Kim In-ryong told the UN General Assembly's Disarmament Committee Monday that nuclear war may break out at any moment. If it does, he said, the entire U.S. mainland is within our firing range, and if the U.S. dares to invade our sacred territory even an inch, it will not escape our severe punishment in every part of the globe. Yet most surprising to us, to Americans, is that Deputy Ambassador Kim doesn't believe that this brink of nuclear war is caused by North Korea. To understand what a North Korean means, you have to understand something about group psychology. Every tribe and nation in its early stages defines itself by demonizing an enemy. For example, America defined itself in 1776 by demonizing the tyranny of England. And during the last 69 years, the United States has been the enemy that North Korea has used to carve out an identity. A few hours ago, Rodong Sinmun, which is North Korea's official party newspaper, labeled America the Empire of Evil. North Korean children are taught that during the Korean War, Americans rounded up innocent Korean civilians, raped and tortured them, threw them into pits, then killed them. That's taught in schools. Korean school children are also taught that Americans are a race of inhuman monsters, monsters who must be killed. So in North Korea's single-shooter video games, you score points by slaughtering guess who? Americans.
Oh, that's sad.
Now, stories in today's North Korean party newspaper call for even more of this education of children in what it calls anti-U.S. class consciousness. The newspaper adds that every North Korean should react to the homicidal U.S. imperialist rifle with an artillery piece. What's more, says the party newspaper, Americans are a pushover, explains the paper, having grown corpulent in aggression, plunder, and war, the Americans are no longer willing to fight at the cost of their lives for their system and their cause. Now, topping all of this, the North Korean ideology has an end times scenario, like the coming of the kingdom of Christ for Christians. The North Korean end times is what the official party newspaper, Rodong Sinmun, calls the day when, quote, the U.S. imperialists are driven into the helpless abyss of ruin by the stern judgment of history. And Rodong Sinmun adds that this apocalyptic instant will be the day when, quote, Korean-style socialism emerges ever victorious in the final showdown with the U.S. imperialists. This U.S. downfall, says the party newspaper, is the will of the people, and it is something more. It is the ideal of mankind. It is, quote, the beacon of hope for progressives of the world, for nations allied to North Korea, countries like China, Russia, Iran, Syria, Palestine, and Cuba. So the entire identity of the North Korean people is wrapped up in something very simple, hatred of the USA.
It's got to go away. Hey, by the way, I look forward to getting you on to talk about your latest book, How I Accidentally Started the 60s.
I look forward to it, too.
Okay, Howard, thank you so much. Good perspective. U.S. Senate Republicans appeared to have enough votes to pass a budget measure that is crucial to President Donald Trump's hopes of enacting tax reform legislation before the end of the year. Who has the world's number one economy? Well, they say not the U.S. By most measures, China has passed the United States and is pulling away. Mish Shedlock with us. Mish, how did this happen? Who was asleep at the wheel?
George, we're not asleep at the wheel. I've debunked that story about three times in the last 3 days.
Well, make it number four.
Here, let's look at it. China has capital controls. China does not have a free market enterprise. What makes the USA great, George, is our Bill of Rights. We have freedom of speech, freedom of press. We've got an independent court. Look at the courts in China. Look at the courts in Turkey. Even in the EU, you can be fined for saying things that some policymaker decides he doesn't like. This is what made the USA great. We've got the world's biggest bond market. China has almost zero bond market for its treasuries. And it's so funny. Someone whose opinion I otherwise respect came out the other day and told me, King Dollar is dead, long live the yuan. And that was my response to him, George.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Michael Mish Shedlock. Stunned researchers have discovered 400 mysterious stone structures in Saudi Arabia, which date back thousands of years. Experts are still unsure as to the purpose of the structures, but some of them were found draped over lava domes. We've got that full story for you to look at in the news at coasttocoastam.com. A survey finds that 7 in 10 millennials and the younger Gen Z prefer to communicate digitally, mostly by text message, than in person. They studied 4,000 young adults aged 18 to 34, and that's apparently the results they get. I believe that. I think that's happening all over the planet. A proposal by a World Olympians Association official that athletes be chipped and tracked like dogs to prevent drug cheats has crossed the line, according to consumer privacy expert Liz McIntyre. McIntyre is the co-author of Spy Chips, a bestseller about the dangers of RFID tracking technology. She's forming CamCat, Citizens Against Marking, Chipping, and Tracking, in response to combat attempts to chip humans forcibly or by threat of losing benefits. Up next, Liz McIntyre on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you with our guest Liz McIntyre for the next couple hours. As I was mentioning, a proposal by a World Olympians Association official that athletes be chipped and tracked like dogs to prevent drug cheats. Now, Liz McIntyre is an award-winning investigative writer, privacy activist with a flair for exposing corporate shenanigans and bureaucratic misdeeds. She and Dr. Catherine Albrecht, the regular on Coast to Coast, co-authored the bestseller Spy Chips. McIntyre works as a consultant for startpage.com, which is a very private search engine. She invites listeners to join her at Twitter for lively debates on technology and privacy issues. And she formed what is called CamCat, and we're going to find out about that now. Liz, welcome back.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine. And how's Catherine doing these days?
You know, Catherine's doing okay. She's having a tough time. And I really hope that she'll come back and work more on issues. But right now, she's kind of taking a break.
Well, she deserves it. She's worked hard, and she's in our prayers, of course.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm glad you're here, Liz, because a lot has been going on these days with privacy issues. They just don't seem to stop, do they?
They don't. It's really scary. And frankly, you mentioned Catherine. I wish she were here to work on these issues, but she's not, and I respect that. And so life goes on and the tracking goes on, so someone has to do something about it. So
here you are.
I'm here.
Carry the torch, indeed. Tell me about CamCat. What is it?
Right. Well, you know, CamCat, which is Citizens Against Marking, Chipping, and Tracking, and you can find us now at camcat.org. That's CamCat. .org. And basically, it's something that I just had to do, George. It wasn't a long time in planning. I've always been working on these issues, as you know, with Catherine. And then when this Olympic chipping proposal came up, it was so horrifying to me. It was a sign that the technology, that the impetus, that the thought process about chipping people was getting way, way too serious. I mean, when you're going after, you know, a few people like in a company in Wisconsin, you kind of go, well, all right, you know, that's an aberration. But when you're talking about the CEO of the World Olympians Association talking about mandatory chipping for all athletes.
And that's the key word, mandatory.
Mandatory chipping for all athletes. You know, and he did say it was just a proposal. It was just his idea. It was not official. But the fact that he delivered this information at a formal speech at an anti-doping convention in London just a few days ago, you know, that he would do that, the audacity of that proposal, just struck me, and I thought, well, you know, the first person I want to call is Catherine, you know, but I'm respecting her time off, and there's really no one else working on this right now or, you know, heading it up, and so I felt like, you know, I don't want to see everything that we've done not be used to shape this debate, to actually make a big change in the world. I mean, we have to fight this. And so that's how CAMCAT came about. Sort of, you know, the universe reluctantly drew me into the project, but now I'm in it feet first.
Well, isn't there a Nevada legislator who's trying to get legislation passed in that state to prevent companies from mandatory chipping of its employees and people?
Yes, actually there was. I'm not sure where that is right now. My understanding was it was dropped, that it never was followed through on, which is pretty typical. We've seen a lot of these things go through, you know, the Senate or whatever, you know, body in the state, and then suddenly get held up, and people are saying, legislators are saying, well, is there really a problem? Are we really trying to legislate something that's never going to be a problem or isn't, you know, in the foreseeable future? And I think that happened in Nevada.
And that was Senator Becky Harris, their state senator.
Correct, their state senator, yes. And we do need to get back in touch with her, because I think this development with a world organization planning to chip our heroes, our role models, this changes the entire debate.
Let's talk about two things with regards to chips, Liz, and that is, what are they used for? What's their purpose going to be? And why we believe that it's not good to mandatory enforce people to have them. What do they use these chips for?
Well, of course. Well, first of all, I think most of your audience knows what these chips are, these microchips. We also call them RFID tracking chips or spy chips. But for those who don't, I'll just do a real quick refresher. Basically, RFID stands for radio frequency identification, and it tells you how these microchips communicate. It's by radio waves, just like, you know, people are listening to us tonight, and those radio waves travel through space, right through their homes, right through the windows and doors. The radio waves that these chips communicate with can also pass through solid objects. Now, the waves may not travel as far. It depends on the device and what it's, you know, supposed to do and whether it has a battery and so on. But basically, the principle is the same. What happens typically with the chips we're talking about that get embedded in people is they're glass encapsulated chips that get injected into the upper arm, and now some of them are going into the webbing between the thumb and the pointer finger. But basically, those chips are passive without a battery, and you need a device called a reader device to read them. And basically what it does is it sends a burst of energy directed at the chip, and then the chip reflects back a unique number, like a social security number for things.
Okay.
Okay, and George, you know a social security number is not just a number.
No,
right?
It's not.
It's not
and,
just a number.
And nowadays it's, well, if somebody steals it, they could really make your life miserable.
They can make your life hell, as we know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of that with identities being stolen. But, you know, a social security number for things has the same issues because it can tie into almost unlimited information about the object that it's embedded in or attached to. And, of course, the chips aren't just for people to be embedded in them. Right now, there are chips that can be attached to products, to pallets and cases, to track things and widgets from factory to stores. You know, and those are okay. We don't have a problem, but they can also be on individual products, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can be on store shelves, and when people pick them up, and they're in their clothes or in their shoes, and they're walking around with them, they have tracking devices on them, which can be read from a distance, sometimes a short distance, but they can be read without your knowledge or permission because radio waves are silent and invisible, right?
Right.
So, you see, we have this whole world of RFID, this whole world of different possibilities, different privacy invasion possibilities. And now, you know, they're actually talking about not just putting them on things like on tags you can rip off, but embedding them in objects and embedding them in people, like this World Olympians CEO proposes.
And, you know, Catherine used to tell us that the dogs that have been chipped are developing lesions and cancers and tumors by the spot where they put the RFID chip in.
Absolutely, at a higher rate than you would expect. I mean, dogs do get tumors, but a very high percentage relative to what would be expected were forming around these microchips. So it's scary. We haven't seen this in people yet because, frankly, not too many people have been silly enough to submit themselves to this. But yes, in dogs there has been some research, and I hope to get that research posted again so everyone can see all the work that Catherine did in following through on that.
Liz, are there any research projects out there that would show what people would respond to given the possibility of a mandatory or voluntary chipping?
You know, I don't think there's been a current survey that I know of that's like an official scientific survey, but I think if you were to do a finger in the air survey, so to speak, you talk to people and they go, no way, you know, no, hell no. But I think, that kind of attitude can change if the right marketing is done. And right now, I mean, you know, marketing, it's being marketed. I mean, people are now trying to really to revive this after Catherine and I did so much to point out the downsides of this technology and really, you know, frankly, make a lot of companies go underground and change their plans for a long time.
Are you spiritual?
I am.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about the sign of the beast, of course. And
okay.
People are beginning to think that chipping computers may be the sign of the beast, the 666. What do you think?
You know, I am really, really careful with that, and I tell you why. Because right now we don't know what that's going to be and how that might happen, what will transpire. And I find it really dangerous to call something, you know, the mark of the beast. It's sort of like, to me, when you think, oh, for sure, you know, Jesus is coming back, and then you know how some people strip the clothes off and
mm-hmm.
run to the top of a mountain. You know?
They do that, sure.
And they sit up there for a few days, and they go, well, I guess he's just late, you know. And then they eventually realize, oh, my gosh, I have to go down and face everybody, and I'm naked. So that's the kind of thing we don't want. And it just undermines any message that might get out there. So I'm really, really careful about labeling any kind of implant this. Again, also, I think that when people say, oh, this embedded chip is the mark of the beast, you have to look at what's in the Bible, and it talks about there being a mark on the hand or forehead. It doesn't talk about something injected into your hand or forehead. I'm not saying it couldn't be that or it's not translated properly. But to me, common sense says, you know, if you look at these chips in the hands of people, they're kind of lumpy. And I haven't seen one in the forehead yet, but I have a feeling that a lot of people would not like that lumpy forehead. So I don't think that's going to be a universally accepted method. But there are some RFID and similar technologies that very well could meet the definition.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely could.
But scary.
Yeah. I mean, there's a tattoo, an ink tattoo that communicates like an RFID chip. It's a tattoo embedded in the skin by ink. And it's made by Somark, and they use it to tattoo cattle and so on to track them. And it's a very quick procedure. You just kind of like have all these bunch of needles, and they just do a real quick injection of a of a unique ID number.
Liz, we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk more. We'll take phone calls next hour. I'm going to read a little bit of Revelation about that passage you mentioned because it is frightening. We are back with Liz McIntyre as we talk about the RFID chips, her book, Spy Chips, she wrote with Dr. Catherine Albrecht. Their website, camcat.org, camcat, CAMCAT.org. Liz, I'm going to read part of Revelation 13, 16, and 17 here. And this is kind of fascinating. We touched on it before the break. And the second beast required all people, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, the name of the beast, or the number of its name. Here is a call to wisdom. Let the one who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and that number is 666. Ooh, it's kind of chilling to hear that, isn't it?
It is. I mean, if you don't, if you're not religious, it sort of makes you look at the technology and you kind of go, "Whoa, there's something to this, baby," right?
I can see one day them saying, "Look, we're going cashless. We're getting rid of credit cards. Everything will be in a chip that we're going to embed in your hand, and all you need to do when you go shopping, so you could buy or sell, is just to wave your hand right over this little reader." And money comes right out of your bank account or your account, your digital account, and you're ready to go. I can see that happening.
Well, it's already happening. In fact, that remember we talked about
that Wisconsin company. That's right.
Yeah, I was here in August, and we were talking about how this company, Three Square Market in Wisconsin, said that they were going to chip their employees.
Voluntarily, right?
Voluntarily, right. Yeah. Voluntarily. So that they could buy snacks at kiosks and they could open their computers without, you know, having to type in a password. They could go to the photocopier, make photocopies, and so on. So it was being sold as basically to sell snacks because the company was in the business of making these snack kiosks and they wanted to sell this product, obviously, to more people. And, well, if you're not willing to do it yourself, then how are you going to sell it to other people? So they had to kind of start the ball rolling there. And so they had a chipping party. About 50 of their employees voluntarily took their chips. Of course, what's voluntary, George? Was that really voluntary?
Well, you know what? One might say, well, it's kind of smart. The boss wants us to get chipped, so I got to look good in front of the boss. Who's going to turn him down, right?
Right, exactly. And, of course, you know, that's important because in Wisconsin there's actually a law forbidding forced human chipping. So the company couldn't force their employees to do it. But frankly, if they had tried to force them, there would have been outrage and the company would probably have been drummed out of business. But since they made it voluntary and they made it look so darn cool and have a big chipping party, you know, they got these people to sign up. And frankly, I don't know if they really know what they signed up for because in listening and reading about some of the things the CEO has put out there, it seems to me like he's missing parts of this. Like he thought he was the first company in the United States to chip employees, which he wasn't. I mean, that was back.
He got a lot of publicity. He did get that.
He got the publicity, but he was wrong on that count. He also said things like, "Wow, if you don't want it in your hand anymore, all you have to do is just push it out like a splinter." I'm thinking, really, really. So I'm wondering, you know, what kind of informed consent these employees really gave. But beside the point, okay, so, you know, we were talking about, we're getting back to this thing of this payment system, which is what this Wisconsin thing was supposedly all about. You know, don't dig in your pocket for change. Just go up to the kiosk, wave your hand, get your Cheetos or get your Snickers or whatever other, you know, snack that you want and walk away and you're a happy camper, right?
And by the way, the robberies of the future, if this happens this way, would be to stab your hand and grab that chip.
Yes.
They can't take money. You won't have it. So what they'll do is they'll take your chip right out of your hand.
Well, you know, and there's precedent for that. In our book, Spy Chips, we talk about, listen, this is not far-fetched. In our book, Spy Chips, we have a scenario, a real vignette that is a real situation where a guy was driving a Mercedes with a fingerprint starter, and criminals stopped him, and they cut his finger off.
Oh, my, to steal his car.
They'll go to all kinds of lengths, and so, no, that's not, you know, they could grab you and say, you're coming with us, force your hand up against a, you know, an ATM machine.
Yeah, absolutely. Or a retina scan. They pluck out your eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold your little eyeball up to the scanner or something. Who knows?
Who knows? So it's ridiculous anyway. It's ridiculous for security. It's just a ridiculous notion.
Has technology, Liz, gone too far? I mean, I had a story right before you came on. They surveyed millennials and Generation G's kids, and they all love not to communicate verbally anymore. They love sending text messages. They don't even like to talk on the phone. They would rather just send a text message. And look what the digital era is doing to people and communication. Have you ever seen a group of younger people out to dinner? Not one.
Look at each other.
That's right. Not one communicates at the dinner table. They're sending text. They may be texting each other at the table. I'm not sure.
Oh, they are. That's what they do. Because why should they talk to them when they could text them? And then it's like they're for posterity, I guess.
2 feet away and they go, what are you having for dinner?
Exactly. But you know what? You know, before we give up on the tech generation, I actually have some hope, because the tech generation knows tech, and they know all the tricks, pretty much, where a lot of people who just have a little bit of it, you know, who are kind of like, you know, in their 30s, 40s maybe, you know, that have some of it but don't have that, you know, born with it kind of sense of technology, like it's linked at the hip. I think these new people coming up are going to understand some of these privacy problems and some of the technology issues perhaps more clearly than us. And so I think they're going to be smart, and they're going to say, you know, a tracking chip, if I can control it, fine, but, you know, what are the possibilities here? And they're the ones who are going to be the hackers. They're the ones who are going to be the people thinking deeply about this rather than just accepting it, I hope.
What do you think of the new technology of social networking? Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, things like that. Snapchat, Instagram.
Oh, you know, my gosh. You know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it's important to communicate that way if you want to get a message out, which is really hard for me as a privacy advocate.
I mean, on one hand, I got to interrupt you here. On one hand, it's amazing for breaking news stories. Amazing.
Absolutely.
That's how we had... I was on the air that tragic Sunday night, October 1st, when the shooting started in Las Vegas. Most national shows were either running tapes or they weren't on. I was. And we had a message via text message that there was a shooting going on in Vegas. And I had our producer, Tom Danheiser, check it out. And he said, yeah, something's going on, George. It's verified. And because we need to verify before we start spouting things off. And so we started talking about it across the country while this story was unfolding. Social network is great for that if it's real.
Right. Absolutely.
I underline that. If it's real.
If it's real. Right.
I mean, a lot of people could get pulled into this, but do you use Facebook or anything like that?
Well, you know, I have used Facebook and Twitter as billboards, you know, to communicate information, not personal information, okay, because that's a danger. A lot of people have gone that way. They're posting pictures of their kids, of their home, of their Christmas presents.
The food they eat?
Yeah, I mean, it's like putting a sign outside that says, hey, come rob me, or hey, I'm going on vacation, my home's empty.
Yeah, I'm out here at this restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. So it can be used in a positive way, like you say, to communicate important information. I mean, I think the fact that we, you know, got this information about the World Olympians Association, that sort of information could have been hidden years ago. But because of the way news spreads through social media, this is not going to be hidden. So that's a really positive thing. So I like social media for that reason, if it is used responsibly. However, I think the companies running the social media organizations need to really take a look at their privacy policies. I think that hopefully there will be some free market innovation where we see some more privacy-friendly companies arise. And then, of course, these established companies like Facebook and Twitter have to be, you know, more privacy-friendly to compete. I'm really hoping that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Now, I will say this. There are some really bad stories out there, like just about Facebook. Just came out like in the last couple of days, I guess, you know, that now it seems that that the UK, a spy agency, has been going through everyone's social media profiles. I mean, using that information, mining it to try to find out things about people.
I could believe that. I could believe that because people put a lot of personal stuff out on that stuff.
Right. So don't do that. But still, it's just disturbing that that is even possible. And I'll tell you what else is really disturbing. And this is mostly about Facebook, I have to say, George. And I don't want to bash Facebook, but yeah, I have to bash Facebook here. They're getting so invasive. In fact, I saw a story a couple of weeks ago that now they're actually talking about forcing people to submit facial recognition or some kind of face print to prove who they are. So, you know, they're getting so upset about people, you know, using, I guess, fake IDs of some kind or false names to try to protect their privacy, you know, somewhat, or saying things that, you know, maybe they aren't backing up because they're, you know, they're not really out there. You know, but then they're going to this extreme. I mean, that's just, to me, that's just gone beyond. And I will tell people out there that I was just locked out of Facebook. I use it for business only, basically.
They locked you out?
I don't even know what to call it because, I mean, the account is still there. There's a problem with it. They're telling me I have to prove who I, well, they didn't even tell me that. They're not saying anything. I try to log in. This is what happens. I try to log in. And then they say, oh, you have to supply a phone number that we can send a text
right.
message
or,
to.
Or, and then supply ID or something, right?
Right. Well, they didn't do that part yet. They haven't done that with me. They said, put in a cell phone number. Okay, I put a cell phone number in, get an SMS text message
with a code.
Number. I put it in, and then I put it in, and they say, and then they put me back into another loop. And I have to do it again and again and again, and it's like...
Weird.
It's weird. It's like, and I've written to them. I mean, I've posted to them on Twitter. I've posted places where they should see this messaging. I've emailed their security people. They won't even respond to me. And I'm thinking, well, maybe they just don't want to talk to me because they don't want people to know that they know I'm off or that they, you know, I do post some controversial material.
Yes, you do.
I do. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on and, you know, I don't want to, you know, make a false assumption, but come on. I mean, any organization like that that's become almost like a public marketplace of sorts where people expect to get information and see things like from me, right, on microchipping, on the important developments of the day, suddenly, you know, cut off, what power is that? There's something wrong about that.
That's true. What's new with StartPage.com?
StartPage. StartPage.com is still the world's most privacy friendly search engine. It's the most private search engine, and I just love where we're going. I'll tell everyone just a sneak peek. We are doing some upgrades behind the scene and hope to have some really cool features, new features coming out.
It's free to use, right?
It's absolutely free, George, and let me say that this is a small step. You know, when people say, what can I do? What can I do to fight against all these things like the chipping and the tracking and the Facebook following me into stores? And okay, first of all, you got to pull back your information. And one of the worst places to go is a search engine that tracks you because you're typing in searches that are meaningful to you, like things about, oh, medical conditions, right? Maybe work, finances. Think about the sensitive things that you put in there every day, right? And then all of a sudden, you wonder, well, gosh, I just typed in here about toe fungus. Why am I getting ads for toe fungus cream, you know? It's because they're these big search engines like Yahoo and Google, they're tracking everything you do, everything you search, and they're building these profiles. Now, it's in order to deliver targeted advertising, which is really, really annoying.
That's what they want.
But it goes beyond that. It goes way beyond that because that information can be and has been used in court against people, and you know the government's interested in that information. Now, it's just annoying. And so StartPage.com, that's StartPage.com, is great because when you go to StartPage, you get excellent search results. We deliver actual Google, I'm talking Google, the best in the world, search results, but Google never sees you. StartPage does not collect any personal information at all, zero. Okay, no personal information. And so you get delivered these results based on the whole world of possibilities, not based on what they want you to see, right? What, say, Google or Yahoo want you to see, or what...
Yeah. I mean, if you search for winter boots, all of a sudden, winter boots start popping up on every site you go to. They know where you are.
That's absolutely right. And that's like, that's so dangerous. That's so dangerous. And then, of course, advertisers can use that against you because they know what you want. And then the price, you know, we've seen all kinds of shenanigans with price changes and so on the Internet. So you're better off keeping that information private and to yourself. And you know what? And then the other thing I want to talk about here is a lot of people don't know, StartPage has a proxy. It's free also. So, you know, when you get search results, then you have to click on these links and you go places sometimes you don't know where you're going, right? I mean, it's kind of dangerous now with all the malware. So StartPage, with every result, offers a free proxy. And you click on that. It's optional. You click on that free proxy link, and then you can visit third-party websites, and you can be completely anonymous. So the website you're visiting, you can see the information, but they don't see you at all. Their advertisers don't see you. And in addition, because you're protected within the StartPage proxy, that third-party website can't download spyware or malware onto your computer. So StartPage is not only a great private search engine, it's a great way to surf the web privately, too.
And it's been around a couple of years now. I remember Catherine telling us about it when it was just starting.
Oh, my gosh. A couple of years? This is like the first, the original private search engine. StartPage, basically, originally was called IxQuick, okay?
But basically, I remember. That was hard to find.
Right, yeah. But now we renamed it kind of StartPage, and that's the most popular because it delivers Google results. And basically, that company that with that idea is the first, and that's been around, oh, my gosh, I know it's over 10 years. It's a long, long time in the world of privacy. So, we were definitely the first.
All right, Liz, we're going to come back in a moment. Final hour to go here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take phone calls with you as we talk about the RFID chips. And I'm going to ask you all a quick question before you go into your question, and that will be, will you get chipped or would you get chipped? Simple as that.